We wish you a happy news year, and one that's filled with actual news. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Well, it's the Saturday after Christmas. I hope everyone had a beautiful Christmas. I know I did. I had my little granddaughter over, and she got lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of goodies. And I had a great time on Christmas morning. My wife says, oh, by the way, Clara's going to be here pretty quick, and you need to put this thing I bought for her at IKEA together. I opened this thing up, and I went, you've got to be kidding me. It had to be about 50 little pieces, and oh, my gosh. So I was down on...
Now, IKEA is Swedish for insane, right?
Well, my... daughter's in-laws, wonderful people from Georgia, Steve and Linda. Steve is originally from Alabama, and he's got that southern slow speak really down. And one day he comes to Jenny and I, and he says, I know what IKEA stands for. And we're like, well, what's that, Steve? And he says, I know every aisle. Because he's been there so much with Linda. So
yeah, no doubt. That's
great. I know every aisle. So next time somebody asks you what IKEA stands for, you'll have the answer. This was a little cooking set. It looked like a stovetop and a little sink with a microwave on the top.
Sure, yeah.
So it was in two major sections, so I was... sitting on the floor trying to keep the dogs from chewing up the plastic parts and trying to keep head and tail of all the screws and odd little tools and all that stuff. And yeah, it took me about 2.5 hours to put the thing together. But of course, then we did have enough batteries. They had the little cooktop has what looks like the elements. Mm-hmm. And if you click a little switch, it glows. And if you click it again, it glows higher. So it looks like you've got low, high, and then off. And the beauty of it is it won't eat the batteries up, because if the child loses interest and walks away, it goes off by itself after about a minute.
Hey, somebody was thinking.
Yes. IKEA is very clever about that kind of stuff, and it's very sturdy. It's not plastic. It's made out of plywood, and it's not fiberboard. It is made out of plywood, so it should last through however many iterations of child that size it goes through. Very well built, actually pretty easy to put together if you actually follow the instructions, although I had to laugh. They have a little graphic in there that's like, if you're tearing your hair out, you can call IKEA and they'll help you put it together.
Well, that's nice of them.
Yeah, this show is not sponsored by IKEA, but we have that one in Columbus, and I have bought furniture over there that, believe me, I go to the scratch and dent section, and I got a nice sleeper couch in there for a great bargain. So always be ready to sweep the bargain bin at IKEA. So keep that in mind.
I will, if I ever darken the door of an IKEA. I have this aversion to places that will eat up your paycheck and leave you sitting for hours trying to figure out, where is slot A and why does peg B not fit?
Well, believe it or not, everything I've bought from IKEA has either been fairly easy to put together or fully intact. Now, I have had to put together a couple of... We've bought some... you've been in my office. The two lights...
I have been, yes.
The two lights that flank the couch, those are IKEA's.
Oh, okay.
And they're dandy. They've got a little reading light off the side, and they've got a light then that lights the ceiling. And it's really nice in here to turn off the overheads and turn those on if you're out here reading or watching the Idiot Box or whatever. Because we do have this set up as a spare room. We can use that as a spare room if we need to.
No, that's cool.
Yeah, that's the only way.
No, my rule of thumb is life is too short for me to waste time trying to put together furniture I can buy already assembled.
Yeah, at a significantly higher price. But yeah.
Well, you know what? Price is a factor, that's for sure. But where I shop, it's usually not. It's called thrift store.
Yeah, well, I got you there. You've also seen my conference table, which is a drop leaf that I bought with a pair of chairs at a flea market.
There you go.
And we took it home and cleaned it up and got the, it had obviously been in a barn or an attic. It had a mud dauber's nest in it. And the mud daubers had long since moved out. So we cleaned that off, and wow, I got a bargain. It's a nice table.
Yep.
So I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, we call those previously loved items.
Yes, certified pre-owned.
Yeah, exactly.
I hereby certify that somebody else owned it before I did.
That's right. The thing is, and it's kind of funny you bring up flea markets and thrift stores and things, is because there are stories behind a lot of things, and sometimes you get the real stories and sometimes you don't. What's the old Latin caveat emptor, buyer beware?
Let the buyer beware, yes.
Let the buyer beware, because you have to be careful that you understand or you know which questions to ask of someone in order to get the full story on what's going on with a particular item. And I think that's just as true with what we're talking about today, Chuck, because by and large, now, this doesn't apply to our audience, because our audience is a carefully selected premium audience as opposed to the general rabble out there. But the general rabble tends to basically take whatever they hear from the mainstream media, the MSM, you know, that's the your ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN,
PBS, yeah.
PBS, so on and so forth, the alphabet soup of news agencies. And they tend to latch on to one or two that they feel are resonates mostly with what they truly believe, whether you're like a very progressive liberal and it's NPR, or maybe some like the Daily Kos or Huffington Post, or if you're a moderately to fairly conservative and you think Fox News is a conservative outlet, or maybe you go a little stronger to the libertarian side and you go to places like Breitbart or Reason Magazine or others, all have their own spins on various things of news. But the one thing that we have been finding, Chuck, and the reason why I kind of gave our opening intro a little pepper there, was because it seems that more and more the mainstream media has forgotten one of the basic tenets of being a media outlet, and that is reporting what is there, not reporting what you want to be there. In the common parlance, what most people, including our president, calls it is fake news.
Well, it is fake news. Look, if you sit there and sit and spin, now look, there is none of us who looks at the facts of a story and doesn't understand it from our own particular viewpoint.
Well, of course not. Yeah, we all use our filters.
That's called our inward bias. In other words,
yes,
we apply our own set of filters to what we read. Now, you can apply good filters and you can apply bad filters. What has happened in our day and age is there is a lack of acknowledgement that there are several different and honestly of equal value streams of judgment about how facts should be interpreted. The fact is that the mainstream media have adopted this almost to a man or a woman, if you will.
Right.
They have adopted a globalist worldview on how to report and interpret facts. There are plenty of other worldviews. There are nationalist worldviews, and by that I don't mean what gets a bad rap now when you say nationalist. What happens? The left, the globalist left, attaches white to it.
Oh, okay.
All right. And what does that make? What is a white nationalist? It's a code. It's a code word for National Socialism.
Right, for Nazis.
Yeah.
Neo-Nazis.
Now,
yeah.
I have absolutely no use for National Socialism, Fascism, or for that matter, Communism, any of those isms. And as if part of that worldview is the idea that Nazism and Communism are opposite worldviews. And therefore,
or as a couple of wise men once said, I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is that Nazism and Communism are essentially the same disease with differing views on how it should be implemented. In other words, Hitler was an extreme nationalist who thought that the Germans should expand throughout the world And essentially, because Germans were racially superior, they should dominate in the world economy, and everybody else should want to become Germans, but they can't because they're not born that way. Lenin and Stalin had a more internationalist view. They were like, they didn't care what nationality you were. What they cared about was your ideology. So what they wanted was a world government, just like Hitler, but that an oligarchy of Marxists would be in charge rather than National Socialists, and National Socialists of a specific racial profile. Or, if you will, national. German is not a race. It's a nationality. Germans.
Most people get that wrong.
Yeah, exactly. It's essentially like, and I could get in trouble for this, but calling Jews a separate race. Well, they're not. I mean, most modern day people of the Jewish persuasion are really Europeans. There are, of course, people of Middle Eastern origin who are Jewish, but Judaism isn't a race. It is a belief system, and you can become a Jew. I mean, if you've ever heard the, my wife and I were laughing because we were hearing Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song.
Okay.
And if you listen to that song, there's a line in there about people who convert. You know, Rod Carew was a talented Jew, or something. It all rhymed. It's a very funny song if you've heard it. But, of course, there are a lot
of... Well, that would be one that today would trigger so many people and offend everybody, and we'd have to, pick at the radio station for playing it.
Well, it was on a radio station. I think it was on the satellite. It was on one of the satellite stations on my...
Okay.
Well, we were listening. But it was kind of funny, but it talked, about some people who are converts. Well, yeah, they are. Sammy Davis Jr. was converted to Judaism.
Yes, he was.
And there, it does happen, and vice versa. There are Jews that become Christians.
Yes, yeah. And I happen to work for one.
Yeah, it happens, yeah.
Aaron Barrett, CCV, is a Messianic Jew.
Yeah, you know that I was good friends with a guy named Alan Stang.
Oh, yes.
And Alan Stang was a Jew who converted. Now, get this. He was a Reformed Jew, which means he wasn't really very strict. Reformed Jews aren't particularly strict. And he converted to, get this, King James Only Primitive Baptist.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a long walk.
That's a bit of a trek from one spot to the other,
yeah,
yes.
But at his death, he was a baptized, converted, King James Only Primitive Baptist. And all primitive means is that they use older methods of worship, that's all. It doesn't mean that they all dress up in fursuits and carry clubs made out of bone and that kind of thing. So there are all kinds of worldviews out there, Barry. Now, those of us who kind of bunch up in groups. But let me ask you, if we were to get 10 of our friends together and bring up a hot button issue, would we all agree with each other exactly how to handle a situation? What tactics to apply to try to advance our particular viewpoint, in your opinion?
Well, Chuck, we know better than that, because even you and I sometimes on air on this program don't see eye to eye on things. And I'll bring up our who said what quote
last time.
I think we got together, where we talked about a quote about, nobody should see either sausage or legislation getting made. And I said it was from Samuel Clemens. And I think you said it was from von Clausewitz.
No, it was from Otto von Bismarck.
From Bismarck, excuse me. That's right, from Otto von Bismarck. But it turns out we're both wrong.
That's right.
Because you did a little more research on the fact, and it turns out it came from a totally different source rather than either one of those two.
And what's funny is it did come from an American source, and it was printed in a newspaper in Cleveland. But the quote isn't exactly the same, but you can hear how it evolved into that. The sentiment is exactly the same. And in fact, what I think would be true, Samuel Clemens probably did say that, in one form or another, having read it. And also, I'm guessing that Bismarck picked it up in the same way, because it's a great quote. Anyone who loves the law or sausages should never watch either one being made. Now, is that the actual quote? No, it's a little longer, and it was by a guy, as I recall, I looked it up, a guy by the name of Sachs, and he was a quote-unquote lawyer-poet. And I believe I made the remark to you that I thought that was an extremely frightening combination.
Yeah, I believe so.
So, yeah. Now, were we both wrong? Yes. Were we both right? Well, I think maybe we were. So
in answer to your question is, No, we could get 10 of our friends together and we wouldn't all agree. But no, what would happen is that after airing out and working through different scenarios and testing the theories, we would come up probably with something that might, you know, have a good percentage chance of working.
Now,
which is what you try to get down to.
let's look around it at another from another perspective. Let's take a situation like is going on in the Ohio legislature right now. Okay, as we speak, Barry and I are recording on the eve of the sessions at the Ohio legislature to override Governor Kasich's veto of a number of things.
But most importantly to all of us is the heartbeat.
The heartbeat bill.
The pro-life bill.
So by the time this airs, you'll know whether that was overridden or not. Now, we have a lot of people who have a similar opinion that we want this passed. But we have vastly different opinions on why things are happening the way they are and therefore on ways to deal with it. Right?
Indeed.
So you and I are pretty upfront about it unless, let's be frank, there are times you have to be diplomatic and I don't have to be.
Yeah, but those times are fairly few and far between.
Yes, that's right. And there are times when I feel the need to back you up and be diplomatic at the same time. Because, let's face it, even a dumb little show like this on a little radio station in Rushville, Ohio, we do post these on our website, principledpolicy.com. And we do have people that pass them around, which you can do. You can pass those around to your friends, send the link out. There's a share at the bottom. But in any case, it could get back and it could be harmful to your effort to get something done. In a lot of cases, I know you've said, I don't care what they think of me, because I know you're not an access lobbyist. You're a confrontation lobbyist. But
I don't go to make friends and to win their favor by handing them big campaign checks.
Yeah, exactly. But the way this works is sometimes it's like herding cats. Now, on the right, it's kind of like that. There's a lot of independent thought. There's a lot more diversity of opinion on how to interpret facts and what to do about it. On the left, they're very monolithic. I don't want to say completely monolithic because there are people. There's sort of a difference between progressives and leftists. Leftists tend to be nationalistic and they're patriotic. They just disagree with us on how to approach those things, you know, and the amount of socialism that we're comfortable with. I'm comfortable with none. They're comfortable with a great deal more than I am. And then there are progressives who are essentially all about tearing down society so you can rebuild it in their own image. And there are cracks in that facade. You can see it inside the Democratic Party. A radical progressive was elected from New York, big shock. And leadership in Congress is essentially doing their best to shut her up because not only is she a radical progressive, but she's not very smart.
Alexandra or Ocasio-Cortez.
Ocasio-Cortez, either way. She is really not smart at all about keeping her mouth shut.
Chuck, it would just be helpful if she maybe took 10 minutes and read the rules of the chamber that she is going to be serving in. So that she would understand that many of the things she's saying isn't even a function of the chamber that she's going to be serving.
Right. And also threatening people with subpoenas because they've disagreed with her and that kind of thing. And it's sort of like, you don't do that. that's called principled opposition, and they have a right to their opinion. Although that's not necessarily the case if you're dealing with the media. And by the media, I'm going to throw in the mix Facebook, Google,
yes,
YouTube.
Yes, indeed.
If you have a disagreement with their progress, and they are progressive, all three of those are progressive. In fact, I think Google owns YouTube. And Google is an ultra-progressive company. And what do I mean by ultra-progressive? I mean, essentially, they're communist. And they are, anyone who is in disagreement with them, is combating, things like socialism is automatically a Nazi. Why? Because
isn't that so wonderful when the communists call other people Nazis?
Nazis. Yeah, I'm. You know, the Stalin and Hitler were partners in dismantling Poland in 1939. Everybody forgets that.
Yes.
The big treaty that allowed Hitler, against his general's advice, to attack Poland, because he said they all told him, "Do you not understand that that's going to bring Russia into the war?" And he kept telling them, "No, it's not." Not telling them that von Ribbentrop, who was his foreign minister, was in Moscow negotiating a treaty. And in that part of that treaty, that Russia would occupy the eastern third of Poland. And the German generals understood that Hitler would eventually march on Russia, and Russia understood that Hitler would eventually march on Russia. Okay? But why did they do it? Well, it put Hitler about 400 miles further to the west, and it bought time. That's why, don't kid yourself, Stalin had designs on taking back lands that had belonged to Tsarist Russia. Well, who occupied most of Poland? Tsarist Russia. It was split between Russia, Austria, and Germany. And they had designs to go in and take that back. Now, why do I bring all this up? Why do I bring up this progressive, these meetings? Because they are operating in a vacuum. Where is the media that sees it from another perspective? Well, it's out there. And the beauty of the internet is that you can find it. It's in places like Breitbart. It's at places like LouRockwell.com. It's at places like The Daily Wire, The Daily Caller, even to some extent, National Review Online. It used to, to a much smaller extent, the now closed Weekly Standard, Good Riddance, had a more conservative point of view for the most part. But that's what I'm telling you about the diversity of opinion in the right rather than in the left. Because the left loves the fact that Google and YouTube and PBS and NBC and ABC and CBS and CNN and MSNBC and over and over are more than willing to not just report things from the progressive viewpoint. Used to be more leftist, now it's progressive, as I explained it earlier. And to the exclusion, and not just exclusion, but marginalization of views from the right. In other words, when I took, in high school, I was the assistant editor of the school newspaper. I took a journalism class. What's the first thing I learned in journalism class? How do you report? Who, what, when, where, why, and how.
And don't forget, and how is it Trump's fault?
Yeah, that's the whole point. It has gotten to the point now where the news media, in order to make the current sitting president, who is a populist, not a conservative, who is a populist, look as bad as possible. It's not their job to make him look as bad as possible, but that's what they're trying to do. So what are they doing? They're excluding the positive. You know, that's the old song, accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. They're doing the opposite. Accentuate the negative, eliminate the positive. That they're, to the point of creating fake news, to the point of creating fake stories. And how is that being aided? Well, people that are in government, an entire cabal, some of whom who have been forced to resign at this point or have been fired, were involved in creating a false narrative and attempting to make it look good, and in using a chess maneuver to get a sitting attorney general to recuse himself and appoint a special prosecutor at the behest of an FBI director who was later fired, who leaked materials in order to get a special prosecutor appointed. Now, would you know that by simple reporting in the mainstream press?
Of course not.
If you're able to filter out the nonsense, yeah, you could put that thread together.
But filtering out the nonsense is the part.
That's the whole point.
That escapes many.
That's the whole point. That's why we're seeing just drivelous stories coming out of... You expect this kind of stuff out of the HuffPo, the Huffington Post. And you can see it in commentaries on I had to laugh. Trump lost the election by 3 million votes, but it wasn't 3 million, it was about 2 or 2.5, but he won by 34 electoral votes, and those are the ones that really count in the end.
Yeah, well, the electoral votes are the only ones that count, Chuck. I'm sorry,
exactly.
I hate to say but that's...
If you don't get some popular votes, you don't get any electoral votes.
Right, so you got to get the popular votes, but the point is, ultimately, it doesn't matter how many popular votes you get, as Hillary Clinton found out, it's where you get them and how many electoral votes it counts up to.
Now, do we have people, even in conservative media, who would like to see the president essentially be destroyed? And the answer is, yeah, we do. Until fairly recently, Glenn Beck's Blaze was never Trump anytime.
Yeah, they were.
And he basically had to change his tune, not because he's in a financial sinking ship, which he is, and partly because of his Trump bashing, but because he came to the realization that, oh my gosh, what is being done to him and the positive things that are happening. You know, he's looking at himself. Now, he was a Ted Cruz guy, which I was as well. And he's like, he has come out and basically said Cruz couldn't have pulled this off. You and I have talked about this many times. There was not a conservative Republican who could have gotten done what Trump has gotten done. Why? Because they are inherently afraid of the mainstream media who will come out and misreport the news to make them look as awful as possible. Now,
yeah, that's true.
We talked earlier about the heartbeat bill.
Yes.
The day after it passed and it went to the Kasich's desk, and they said, he's going to veto it, and they don't have the... I watched Channel 10 News. And essentially, they had two opponents. They interviewed two opponents of the bill. Did they have any positives? Did they have anybody who was a proponent? No. They had two opponents. One guy was a Democrat, and one guy was a squish Republican in some think tank. Well, they don't have the votes. This is really against the mainstream. The mainstream doesn't see it this way. And the Democrat kept saying, well, it's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional? That's kind of the whole point. We're passing this because it is constitutional, and we want the Supreme Court to acknowledge it. Now, that's the way news gets reported. In the old days, we used to laugh because when there would be a panel, there would be a panel discussion. So some news group on Sunday would invite a panel. What was the ratio of liberals to conservatives?
At least 4-1.
Minimum 4-1. Okay.
Yeah.
And was the conservative really usually a true conservative?
Usually not. They accidentally slipped up and let one get in there.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the way, when I have to laugh that the New York Times so-and-so was the New York Times conservative editor. And I read this guy, he is a squish left center. I can't think of who it is now Who was their their conservative voice?
Paul Krugman?
Krugman, maybe. But Krugman's more of economics, is he not? Krugman's their economic guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's even
Oftentimes on social issues, the Times would go to Frankie Schaefer.
Who was
especially
nothing
when they
like
wanted
a conservative.
Progressive, quote unquote, religious voice.
Yeah, and essentially, if you'll notice, even in your local paper, are conservative pastors writing the articles in the religion section? Never. It's going to be some far left United Church of Christ pastor or United Methodist Church far left, and I realize not all those churches are all completely liberal, but they're pretty bad. One of the reasons that United Church of Christ, United Methodist Church, Episcopalian Church, Presbyterian Church, USA, very far yep. left. Very, very, very far left. And to the point where they no longer worship the Jesus Christ of the Bible. They worship this other Christ who was a great teacher and philosopher, sort of on the same line as Buddha. The Buddha, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And when you say that Jesus Christ died for your sins, they laugh. And he was born of a virgin, they'll laugh. Literally. And you can go to the Christmas programs. I laugh about this in Granville. You can go to the Christmas programs. And they talk about the birth of Christ, of the Virgin, and blah, blah, blah. And you know full well they don't believe it. They'll tell you right up front, we don't believe any of this is true. We hold on to this as a tradition and a symbol, but we don't really believe in the virgin birth or the any of that. Okay.
Well, got what, news for them. Doesn't matter what they believe.
It doesn't matter what they believe.
What
yeah.
God's word says.
Exactly. So. Now,
but
that, that being
you know,
said,
Chuck,
now
kind of going
coming
back,
back
around here a little bit. Though,
exactly. That's what I want you to do.
Yeah. I want to, you know, sometimes even the progressive news media, and since you brought in social media as part of that, has to go back and raise their hands and yell mea culpa. And one of them that had to do that just recently was Facebook. As we saw in an article that just came out here, well, actually, it came out today, this afternoon in the Weekly Caller, or excuse me, the Daily Caller, is that headlines, Facebook dings Democrat operatives who pulled a fast one during Alabama election. Now, I find it interesting even the way they phrase this, Chuck, because what they're actually talking about is someone who committed a crime in trying to manipulate the outcome of an election. If this had been done by a quote-unquote conservative organization, there would have been screams about a Justice Department investigation and how horrible it was. But what we have is, well, Facebook suspended some accounts. And what happened is, according to even the New York Times had to report this, that these Democrats who are linked to a multi-millionaire Democrat funder, a liberal billionaire by the name of Reid Hoffman, who funded the entire effort, they set up thousands of Twitter accounts, supposedly as Russian bots, to push and go and follow Roy Moore's Twitter account so that they could use it as a meme to say that Roy Moore's campaign was being supported by Russia. But of course, what does that have, you know, during that whole time frame when everybody was all Russia all the time and anybody associated with Russia must be corrupt. Oh yeah, well here it is. You know, we're going to link that and do all this. And they spent $100,000, Charles, $100,000 to set up these accounts and including Facebook accounts. It says Twitter, but they also created Facebook pages and, you know, basically went out there and created their own news. Of course, it was all fake. So what they actually did was they used money, dark money, I guess, but now we know how much it is and who it came from, so it's not dark anymore. But they've tracked that down. And so what did the social media giants like Facebook and Twitter do? Well, Twitter hasn't really done much of anything. They just kind of like shrugged their shoulders. And Facebook suspended some accounts. Well, got news, those accounts are probably dead anyway, Chuck, because, well, the election's over with.
Exactly.
It's been over with now for a year and a half. But the other little piece that as the writer from the Daily Caller started digging, and he puts this up here. This is a guy by the name of Chris White who wrote this article. He says that basically that cost of the effort, which was funded by liberal billionaire Reid Hoffman, totaled $100,000. The identical amount, Facebook says, the Russian Internet Research Agency spent trolling people on social media leading up to the 2016 presidential election. So, Chuck, it very well could be that Reid Hoffman and his $100,000, maybe he spent it more than once. And maybe they set up fake news to try to create this buzz about some kind of Russia connection with Donald Trump. Wow.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
That's news you're not hearing from the mainstream media. So you have to understand, as we're starting to find out even from Robert Mueller's investigation, that this whole connection to the Russians seems to be more falling in the lap of the Democrats than the Republicans.
Exactly.
Seems to be falling more in the lap of a failed candidate by the name of Hillary Clinton than a successful candidate by the name of Donald Trump.
Listen, you wouldn't know from the mainstream media that it has come about that Hillary was forced to admit that she paid Christopher Steele to make that, to gin that up. But she has. Now,
yes,
you wouldn't know it, the Russia dossier thing. There's more to this than meets the eye. I to show you the effect that it has, I'm gonna read you one sentence in here that actually shows a bit of bias. Let's see. They also created a Facebook page and imitated conservative Alabamians who said they were not satisfied with the Republican candidate and encouraged others to oppose him. Okay. Moore lost the race after reports showed he allegedly engaged in sexual misconduct with teenage girls when he was in his 30s. Okay. There were lots of those reports. Where did they go? They went nowhere. Why? Because there was no evidence at all.
Nope.
Okay. What is that? How does that strike? It should strike anybody. What particular tactic was used against Brett Kavanaugh?
Ah, yes.
Sexual misconduct when he was in his late teens and early 20s. How much evidence was there to corroborate it? None.
Not a bit.
In fact, the same kind of evidence against the allegations is what saved Brett Kavanaugh's nomination. The fact that people came in and lied under oath, for which nothing happened to them. I think somebody did get referred for prosecution. For at least an investigation, that referred out. What'll happen with it? Nothing. Meanwhile, Roy Moore sits there wiggling on the hook, and we still have this. No explanation, just that he lost the race after reports showed. No, they alleged. They didn't show anything.
Yeah, they didn't show a thing. They alleged.
Exactly. That word is very important. That is exactly how, this is why you have to parse stories that you read, even in the conservative press. Reports didn't show anything. They alleged that showed he allegedly. No, you don't get to play it that way, because who will read the allegedly? Showed is a definite positive. Allegedly is a, well, maybe. Which part will people take away? The definite. Especially, let's face it, people tend to think that way. he engaged in sexual misconduct with teenage girls when he was in his 30s. No, teenage girls, girls who were like 18 or 19. He was a man in his 30s who was successful doing what people have been done in the South for decades, if not centuries, and that is an older, successful man takes a younger wife. Because, you know, he wants to have lots of kids after he's made his nest egg. That's a kind of a biblical concept that people have walked away from. A man was to make his fortune and then take a wife, and very often he took a younger wife, which appears to be the case in Joseph and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
He was already a master carpenter, as near as anybody can tell. He was called the carpenter. That doesn't come. You don't come out at 19 years old and you're a master carpenter. You served an apprenticeship and you learned your craft. Let's not take it too much far down that road. But that's the kind of fake reporting. But
there's even better fake reporting out there, and it's one that all the media got called on just recently. Matter of fact, it was basically one where the media just couldn't help themselves, fell all over themselves to get it out there because they thought they were counting coup. Problem is, they don't know how to count. We looked at this. The NBC News and other media made a huge issue, and I saw that, you know, disrespectful and disgusting, you know, selfishness. I saw all these type of terms floated out there in the media and through their social media hangers-on about how horrible it was that Trump didn't follow the tradition of visiting troops on Christmas.
Believe me, these guys had their pens sharpened. They were ready to open him up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was vicious. Problem is that just hours after they posted these attacks, they found out something because, well, the president outplayed them once again. You see, while they were sitting there writing up articles about how horrible it was that he wasn't visiting the troops, what was Donald Trump and his wife Melania doing?
They were visiting.
They were flying to Iraq to visit the troops in a war zone. But they didn't let the media know because they weren't making a big deal about it. Oops. I'm sorry, NBC News. I'm sorry, Chris Matthews. I'm sorry Joe Scarborough and his hangers on there, and I'm so sorry to, I guess, actress and deeply experienced activist Alyssa Milano, who just can't she falls all over herself to try to beat up on Trump as well, just couldn't quite get there. There were some in the media who knew that Trump was going, and they just enjoyed the after effect of retweeting these horrible comments and tweets about the president. And Brent Hume over at Fox News said, well, by the time this was posted, the president and Mrs. Trump were in Iraq with the troops. And, it's like,
and it had,
oops!
And it had essentially it had been made known. Now, the fact is that Trump has been planning this trip for years, and what's got the news media boiling is the fact that they were not in the loop. A lot of times, all presidential trips overseas, especially to war zones, are secret. Why would that be, Barry?
Well, if you're flying the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military into a war zone, you certainly don't want to broadcast it ahead of time because he becomes the target of every operative out there.
Every assassin in the area is going to be out there trying to kill the president. So they don't tell where he's going. They don't tell when he's going. He just shows up. This is a kind of a time-honored a tactic. A Secret Service would have a cow if he said where he was going, what time he was landing. And yet, that what really galls the media, the mainstream media, except for a very few trusted media types was they didn't get read in on this trip. Usually what happens is the president will let them know, but he says it's embargoed until after, you know, a certain time. You can't publish a story. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make this accusation with no proof, and I'll be quite honest right up front. They would have loved nothing better than to leak the story that he was going to be there. He was going to land at such and such an Air Force base at such and such a time in Air Force One, and he was going to fly over blah, blah, blah. With this. Thus, here's why I say that. There have been people in the media who have made the statement and maintained their jobs that hasn't somebody shot this guy yet? Or hasn't someone done something to harm this guy yet? Why hasn't the military taken him out yet? That kind of stuff.
Which, if we were in a third world nation, you might expect to have a military junta, you know, fire a coup off.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is that the mil. Now I've got a story, and I sent you a copy. You may not have gotten it. From Newsweek.
Okay.
I sent you a URL. Maybe you got it. Maybe you didn't. From 11/20/2018. Now, this is in anticipation of Trump not visiting the troops. And remember, this is before Thanksgiving. Okay? Trump is, quote-unquote, afraid to visit war zone combat troops because, quote, people want to kill him, says report. Well, let me tell you something. Any president who would fly into a war zone would be foolhardy not to fear that someone might try to kill him.
Yeah, you would think.
This kind of reporting is exactly what we're talking about. Now get this. This is how it opens. President Donald Trump has told aides and White House officials that he was afraid to visit U.S. troops in war zones and didn't back the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay. There's a lot of people that don't back the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan was a just war in 2003. It's almost 2019. Okay.
Yeah.
Quote, he's never been interested in going, one unnamed former senior White House official told the Washington Post.
Reed, someone who worked in the Obama administration.
Yes, and was not kept on. Quote, he's afraid of those situations. He's afraid people want to kill him. Well, of course he's afraid people want to kill him. Especially when you've got people who consider themselves to be politically superior who have said they would like to see him killed. Not only that, there are enemies in this country that would love to carve that notch in their gun stock.
Mm-hmm.
Is he wrong?
Sadly enough, yes.
Yeah, this is the most ridiculous thing. Seriously, this is one of the most ridiculous pieces I've ever seen.
Here it comes again as well, Chuck. I mean, we go back around because NBC News, you know, let out with this thing, you know, to make this the big deal that it was so disrespectful that he wouldn't do this and blah, blah, blah. Well, of course, you know, they got checked on it because it wasn't true. So did they print a retraction? Oh, no. Did they change the headline? Oh, no.
What
they did was added an editor's note at the end of the article to make clear that the article's false, but they kept the headline and the body text right where it was, which says Trump becomes first president since 2002 not to visit troops at Christmas time. Though he called military personnel on Tuesday, Trump did not visit a hospital or a military base. No, he went into an actual war zone. Okay. He was in a combat zone. How many times has a president gone into a combat zone to visit the troops rather than going to a military hospital or a domestic base?
Not very often.
Now, you won't find that too too often, because usually the only time they go into a war zone is if we're at war with a company, with a country. Now, of course, we've been deployed in Iraq for how long has it been now, Chuck?
2003.
15 years.
Going on 16.
Going on 16 years. So,
well,
what a shame.
Let's give NBC some credit. They have taken that story down. So if you go out to the NBC News website, it's not there. But what do you do? What do you see? Trump's first trip to a combat zone was secret, except on Twitter. So Breitbart has an article that talks about this. Now they're claiming, first they claimed he wasn't going to go, and then they claimed it was obvious that he was going. Which is it? Which is it? If it was obvious, how come you didn't know? Now, I looked at one of these things. I've only skipped it because it popped up while we were recording. But I looked at part of it, and one thing they posted was from WikiLeaks. Well, I thought WikiLeaks was a bad guy. I thought WikiLeaks was trying to help the Russians.
Yeah, that was what we've been told.
This just gets sillier and sillier and sillier and sillier. It really does, Barry. This is, again, what we've talked about before. Now, did the news media blow their trumpet over the fact that, you know, what did we hear Monday? My mother-in-law came up and said this was the biggest drop in the stock market since 1929. And I go, Janet, numerically or percentage? You know, I think it lost over 600 points on Monday. Okay, fine. You know what? They don't tell you. First of all, it usually drops right around Christmas time for some reason. I don't know why. I think there's not a whole lot of trading going on or something. But I said, Janet, that's just when the stock market fell like 50 points, 50 or 60 points in 1929, but the Dow Jones average was like 900. 800, something like that. Oh, it may have been lower than that. So it was a significant portion of the percentage of the Dow Jones Industrials. The Dow Jones Industrials, yes, were at 24,000 points and it lost 600.
Yeah, which everybody was frightened to death that, you know, that was it's the end of the bubble, that the Trump experiment has failed.
And what happened today?
The largest single upward move in history of the exchange.
Yes, exactly. It was over 1,000 points in a day.
1,086 points. Almost 5% gain. The biggest point gain in history.
And now, everybody says, well, you know, that sets up a big fall for tomorrow. And I said, yeah, it might. It'll probably fall back. Because, first of all,
sure,
as we've been talking about, the stock market's like way, way, way overpriced at this point. The economy's great, but let's face it, it's not that great. It's not, you know, 25,000 points great. At least I don't think so. I think the stock market's been setting itself up for a correction for a couple years. 'Cause if you remember, it's been up since Trump took office.
Mm-hmm.
Who talks about that? Which members of the media talk about that?
None that I've heard.
There's a little thing on it at the top of NBC while I'm out here. Dow surges over 1,000 points for biggest single day gain in its history. They don't like talking about it. Why? Because
they have to admit that the Trump plan is working.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? There's another site, and this would be one that I would recommend people if you want to get interested in the economics of, you know, in the world of Wall Street and everything else, because you get an awful lot of good other information in this as well. And you know, I'm going to give a hat tip and a free plug to ZeroHedge.com. Chuck, you've been over to Zero Hedge, haven't you?
I have. Yes, you bet I have.
It's some really good information. I mean, you can take a look and read. There's an awful lot of things explaining what's going on in the markets. Basically, you know, they're basically looking like saying, okay, maybe the what we have is a bear market, and that, you know, this historic, it may just be a rally in a bear market, which, you know, like you said, tomorrow it may go back down again. But basically, they're saying that the real reason why that big bump happened is because pension funds are buying stocks as part of their quarter-end rebalancing right now. And that's what caused that big, big surge upward. Now think about it, Chuck. Pension funds. How many pension funds, let's just ask. You know, you got federal pension funds, you have state pension funds, you have private pension funds. And if they're all trying to balance their end of quarter by picking stocks, this, you know, this bump could end up trending back down fairly quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
But then again, it may level off to a point where, you know, you have a fairly healthy market. But again, you know, and the president has said this too, that he really would like the ability and the authority to fire the head of the Federal Reserve. And he said something else. I think it was kind of in passing. But he also said that he thought the best thing that could happen for the U.S. dollar is for us to get reconnected to the gold standard. Which that should have created a massive tremor in the Wall Street / Fed environment.
Especially in the Fed environment. Nixon was the guy who completely disconnected us from the gold standard in 1972, I think. And what that meant was then the national banks were, or Federal Reserve, if you will, was free to essentially create a fiat currency. You know, that there's a par value for gold, and that par value is per troy ounce, $20 and a fraction. It's like 20.05 or something. So essentially, $20 an ounce is the par value. What's gold going for right now? Well, significantly more than that. Like,
oh yeah, absolutely,
50 times that. Oh no, no, gosh, it's $1,100 or $1,200, isn't it?
Oh, gold? No, it's over 12.
Yeah, 1269.85 is.
I was going to say, I was just getting ready to look it up. So
it's 1269.85 as of 12/26/2018. So you're at 60 times par value. What does that mean? That means that there's 60 times as much money essentially floating around as there is, as there would have been gold to back it, if we have any gold reserve left.
True.
Which, and that also means that the world's economies, we're running out of time like real fast, but the world's economies are essentially running on, well, it's an empty suit. It's all fiat money. What does that mean? That means it's paper and it's basically based on confidence. Well, what happens when too much money rolls in? Too much paper money's out there, too much liquidity. Confidence goes to what? Way down. And what happens to the value? All of a sudden, you've got hyperinflation because you got to kick out. You got to kick out more to keep the economy rolling. So, you know, we need to watch this, but you're not going to hear anything about this, you know, in the mainstream media. What you're going to hear is economy bad, economy bad, economy bad. Economy's not bad. It's really good right now. But could it go south? Oh, yeah, real fast.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we are out of time. So that being said, we hope we got the point across. Lots of fake news out there, and not all confined to the left-wing media. And by left-wing, I mean the alphabet soup. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, PBS, MSNBC, blah, 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 headline news. Mm-hmm. There's some of it at Fox News. Fox News is more center-left. And there's some all around the place. You have to learn, ladies and gentlemen, to read carefully. That being said, and listen carefully. You have to actively listen and listen carefully. Or you make the same mistake my mother-in-law did and think that really this was like the end of the world. This, you know, 600-point drop. It's not good, but it's not the end of the world. Okay, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.